It's known as middle-class anxiety, a state of worry and pessimism that can grip families in times of economic turmoil. They watch costs like healthcare and tuition gallop upward, while neighbors trapped in the mortgage meltdown lose their homes. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota addressing the Senate.
What started as a foreclosure crisis is now having ripple effects, or more like a tsunami wave, across the entire economy. It affects everyone who wants to borrow money, whether it's for a house, for a car, a college education, or a small business.
The squeeze increasingly strains middle-class earners whose incomes have stagnated while prices rise and while personal debt piles up. The pain can be even greater for poor families whose incomes have fallen since the late 1990s. Reverend Jim Wallace tracks these trends in Sojourners magazine.
9 million American families have somebody in the household who is working hard and full-time. They've got a job, at least one person in the household, and they're raising their kids in poverty. 9 million American families working poor. You know, is that right in America to have a job and have work not pay?
Disturbingly, as the cost of food increases, lines at many soup kitchens across America have lengthened. The Wall Street Journal recently called it a run on banks, in this case, food banks. Patrons, often self-conscious, include people who've never visited a food pantry before. Sometimes the plight of individuals in pain approaches us when someone is begging on an urban street.
I rarely give money to panhandlers, mostly because I don't want to encourage that behavior.
The behavior of panhandling?
Of begging. Because I don't think it's fruitful for the person who's doing it.
Particularly if I meet somebody, repeatedly, I'll direct them to a program that will work for them, or I'll take them there if they want. But I generally give people a couple bucks, and that's just what I do. And I know some of it's going to be wasted and some will be used for drugs and alcohol. I understand that.
How do I respond to them? It depends on how they approach me. I mean, I've given people money. Well, somebody who says, well, I need it, can you give me a dollar? I want to go down the street and buy a sandwich. I'll probably give them a dollar. And if they come up and say, you got a dollar? No. It just depends.
When to help people in poverty and how is an ancient ethical question. But in most cases, there remains a wall between the poor and everyone else. Apart from income inequality, which has grown significantly in the last two decades, a social barrier remains. There's little direct contact between the haves and have-nots. Jim Wallace, author of The Great Awakening, recently visited a ministry for the homeless in Sacramento, California.
I'm sitting at the table with a family, and there's two little boys across the table from me, and one's 9, and one's 4. And my two boys are 9 and 4. And so the 9-year-old tells me he's a math whiz. And my little boy, 9-year-old's a math whiz. And so he says, give me some math questions. Well, I do this all the time at home, so I had some good questions for him. And we talked about the same things that my boys and I talk about, you know, math and school and sports and everything. And then they wanted to watch a video, which is one of my boys' favorite videos. So, you know, these kids, therefore, the grace of God and circumstances and different kind of contexts and different kinds of life happenings, those boys could be my boys, and they're homeless, you know. And until we rebuild relationship with people, until we break out of our comfortable assumptions and protected places, the poor in this country are not dispersed throughout the culture. They are isolated. They are in places where we never see them, never touch them, never hear them, never talk to them. And as long as that's true, we won't understand why people are poor and what the solutions are for overcoming poverty.